to Women Made New. I'm your host, Crystalina Evert. Thank you for joining me. So today we are going to have Lisa Cotter. But before we get into it with her, there's something I want to remind all parents out there. Every once in a while, it is just a good habit to get into of just checking your kid's phone. And I know you all probably have very good kids, and I have good kids. They're sneaky and squirrely sometimes, but just get their phone, get their code, and just check. I would just review their text messages, look at their photos, look at their history, and just do a check-in. And I think some of you out there may not like what you find. And some of you out there are going to be a little more surprised at the things maybe that are on your kid's phone, or things that they're sharing, or things that other kids are sharing with them. And it's something I did over the past couple of days, and it was shocking. So with that being said, check your kid's phone, and it may be good to do it today. And maybe you're saying to yourself, oh, I don't want to cause any problems. I know they're doing good. They're good kids. Yes, I'm sure they're good kids, but other kids aren't good kids, and they're probably sending your good kid some really bad things. So just a little reminder, just a little check-in. I would get your child's phone today and just sift through it. And also today is confession, and it would be really good if you can take your teens to confession, take your kids to confession. Let them see you going to confession. Let them know that's a priority in the house, that that's something that we do. And honestly, it's a privilege that we get to do those things. It's a privilege we have the Eucharist, and slowly it seems privileges and things that we were used to on an everyday basis are not there anymore. And we don't want to take our faith and the beauty that we have in the Catholic Church and the sacraments for granted. So I just wanted to say that before we start. So right now we are going to get into it with Lisa Cotter. Welcome to Women Made New. I'm your host, Crystalina Evert. Thank you for joining us. Today we have the beautiful Lisa Cotter. Thank you for being here, Lisa.
Thank you so much for the invitation. I'm so excited to be back, to be chatting with you. Oh, I'm just grateful.
I have to say congratulations. I am so excited, and I'm very proud of Lisa because she has come out with the most phenomenal book. So tell everybody, reveal what you have done, Lisa. I'm so excited. I really think it's going to help so many women in the Catholic Church, and it's so needed.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so honored to hear you say that. Yes, I do. I have a new book out. It's called Reveal the Gift, Living the Feminine Genius. And it's all about Pope St. John Paul II's feminine genius. And what I did in the book is I took really kind of the academic side. So all the wonderful writings of John Paul II, as well as some of the popes that came before him and after him, and all the amazing things that they've said about women. And then I've taken that and I've made it very practical and very applicable to life. And so we look at the words of the Pope, and then we look at, okay, so what does this actually mean for us in day-to-day life? How do we actually live this gift of our femininity?
I am going to be really honest when I say this. It is confusing. When you hear feminine genius, a lot of women have no idea what you're talking about, or that the Pope wrote on it, or anything whatsoever. It's very foreign, and it's a foreign term, and it's also an intimidating term to some. So can you just kind of break it down? What is the feminine genius?
Yes, that is such a great question. I remember the first time I heard that phrase. At first, I was like a little offended. I was like, well, why do you have to tell me I'm special? Like, I know I'm special. Like, I thought it was JP2's way of like trying to compliment
women.
Exactly. I was like, well, that's just a little condescending. But then I realized that my understanding of genius was incorrect. So I think I first moved from like, oh, that's a condescending term, to, oh, it means that women are really smart. Like, we're really brilliant, because the word genius is used a lot in the business world, even like, oh, what are your working geniuses, right? Like, where are you brilliant in your particular craft? And so I think we've kind of applied that term in some senses to the feminine genius, meaning, oh, well, it just means like, what are your unique gifts as a woman? And while there's certainly something to the unique gifts of women, the feminine genius itself is not the unique gifts of women. The way I understand it, and this is from not my own interpretation, but from Sister Prudence Allen, who I've taken my definition from, or how I kind of launch from when talking about the feminine genius, because it's a confusing topic, right? So Sister Prudence Allen is a philosopher of gender. She used to be here. I'm from the Archdiocese of Denver. So she used to be here in Denver. She taught at the John Vianney Seminary for a long time. And she dedicated her whole life to looking at the concept of woman. So she has this massive 3-volume, I mean, just huge work. I'm like, I can't even fathom how long it took to put this together. I have decades of her life. And in there, she talks about this phrase, genius of woman. And the way she defines it is, she says, the genius of woman refers to a way of being, acting, and loving in the world, which manifests a unique creativity in human relationships. So to break that down even further, if I were to like put it into one quick little phrase, the feminine genius is our person-oriented disposition as women. So the person-oriented disposition of woman. So it's really about our nature, how we were created is our feminine genius. And then from that flow gifts. And the way that you express those gifts is unique. So there's still a uniqueness in terms of how we live our feminine genius as individual women. But really, when we're talking about it, it's about how we were made who we are, which has this person-oriented disposition. So this way about us that really focuses first on people. So we see people with our hearts, is the way JP2 would beautifully put it. This idea that women see people as people, not as objects or as things, and in this sense of, oh, how could I, you know, move the needle forward with this person, or how could they benefit the company, you know, or whatever it is. But women first see, oh, that's a human soul. That's a person who should be cared for and who should be nurtured and who should be, you know, developed as a human, as this soul that was created to live forever. So does that help a little bit? I know it's a hard one.
No, and I think it's so needed. And this book couldn't have come, honestly, Lisa, at a better time, with all of the attacks on women right now. And even the word right now is kind of being banished in our society. And there's birthing people. You know, I mean, what? It's just absolutely ridiculous that the devil has that much control in our society that it even wants to wipe away out of our society the word woman. It's absolutely diabolical.
It is absolutely crazy. And, you know, and I couldn't even have known. It was 2 years ago that I really sat down. This is a book that's been on my heart for about 10 years. It's a topic I was asked to speak on at a SEEK conference, a Focus SEEK conference 10 years ago. And I've been wanting to write this book, but I was waiting for the Holy Spirit to kind of prompt and say, okay, now's the time. So it was about 2 years ago. And even 2 years ago, things looked a little different than they do now. So I could have never known, you know, or imagined that this book was going to drop in the middle of this time when things are really heating up as a society talking about gender in this very new way and debating about it in a very new way. And what I wanted to bring forth was not what is the world currently saying, because the world's definition of a woman will change. I mean, we see this over time, right? If you look at different decades, you see the definition of the ideal woman in the 1950s is a very different definition from the 70s, is a very different definition from the 90s. And so the world's going to keep evolving in the way it talks about gender. It's going to keep evolving in what it says a woman is. But I wanted to go back to not what's changing, but what's unchanging.
What is steadfast, right? Yeah. What is steady? What does God have there as the baseline that's untouchable and unchangeable? What is that, Lisa?
Well, I love to first go back to Genesis. I think there's really great hope in what was written in Genesis that, you know, I think even in throughout history has not always understood the worth and the value and the dignity of woman has not always been upheld. I'm not going to deny that. There are different cultures and eras and times where, you know, women were seen as second class citizens. And, mm-hmm. and no, if we go back to Genesis, right at the beginning, we see that God created man and woman in his image and likeness. So he created man and woman. It wasn't just man. And then later woman was this afterthought. No, he created man and woman in his image and likeness, which means that we are equal in our worth and our value and our dignity. And so that right from the beginning we see. And then we also see beautiful writings about the creation of woman and how she was created in Genesis 2:18, right? We see that she was created to be man's helper. And I remember as a kid, that phrase kind of stuck out to me. You know, I grew up as a child of the 80s and 90s, who I was, you know, I was told like anything a guy can do, you can do it better. You know, take out those men, prove yourself, you know.
Yes.
And so there was like this like, oh, I have to pit myself against men. Men are the enemy and I have to be better than them and prove that I can, you know, assert myself like a man, all these things. But here we see in Genesis 2:18, this phrase helper here, the way JP2 talks about it really brought a whole new understanding to me. He talks about how this idea of help is not one-sided, but mutual. That's what he says in Mulier's Technicon. It's not one-sided, but mutual. So there's a way in which men and women help each other. And this is this great concept of complementarity that he really talks about, how we have unique gifts and unique aspects that we bring to the world in our gender, but we don't make sense outside of each other. We complement each other in the way that we express our masculine and femininity. And when those things are expressed, that's when humanity is fully realized, is how he says it. That's when we really fully see what it means to be human, is when we understand these two genders in complementarity, not in separated as, you know, here's men, here's women, but no, how do we as genders complement each other? And what does that mean for humanity? And so that was really, really helpful for me in understanding the dignity of who I am, but also the beauty of how my femininity complements masculinity. And that brings about the fullness of humanity.
For those of you that are just tuning in to Women Made New, we are talking with Lisa Cotter about her new book, Reveal the Gift, Living the Feminine Genius. And you break this down in such a beautiful way that the everyday ABC Catholic, like me, can understand, because a lot of this can be confusing. And really, with all of the attacks on our gender as women right now, I think it is so important to have that foundation of, one, knowing who you are, whose you are, and what the church teaches about us as women. And in my mind, there in that foundation, there's a lot of clarity and a lot of protection almost of, look, this is what God created me for, and there's nothing else. This is what I am supposed to be doing. This is what God is asking of me, and this is my role here and what God intended for my life. And it's a very unique, and there is genius to the way God set everything up, and it all just flows. It's so peacefully, but you got to be in God's plan, because when you get outside of that, man, those are some rough waters that I don't want to go navigate, because it is scary out there, huh?
Yes, yes, it absolutely can be. Yeah. And I love how you put that. You know, we have to know who we are and whose we are. And I think that when we try to understand our identity apart from God, or apart from the foundation of which we were created, and apart from what the church has revealed to us through the ages about the uniqueness of our gender, it leaves people hopeless. It leaves them in a lot of despair. And I think that when you understand that, no, like, you have great purpose in the way that you're created, and recognize too that that doesn't mean that you have to live in this neat itty bitty little box. And there's only one way to express that. And if you don't express it in this exact way, well, then you're going to fail. But realizing that there's this huge, like, playing field on which you can live and express this gift that you have, I think it just helps women to be free. It's like we need certain parameters. It's like any game. There needs to be a certain amount of rules, or else the game is just chaos.
Our society right now is the chaos. You see it erupting everywhere, Lisa, right? And people think that we're suppressed. we're so suppressed in the church as women, and we're not allowed to be free and grow and become who we're created to be, whatever that may be, if it's gender fluid, if it's male, female, whatever goes, right? And it's like, no, God has that purpose and that plan. And if we don't follow that, we're getting all this gender ideology that is confusing, and to our poor youth having to suffer from it.
It is a very, very confusing time, I think. Yeah. As a youth, just not really understanding. I mean, you're just trying to figure out basics of life. How do I deal with emotions? How do I deal with friendships? You know, how do I interpersonal relationships? And then you throw on this whole other layer of things that all of a sudden they're going, oh, I have to decide that too. Like, oh my gosh, it's a lot of pressure to put on a child who's trying to understand just life. And then you have all these other complications added into it. It is a very challenging time, I think, for kids who are growing up in our world where there's just an infinite amount of, I guess, options is what you would call it.
Options. Yeah, I guess we can call it that for now. That's something we can call it. It's beautiful. Cardinal Robert Sarah put out this quote, and I think it's absolutely spot on. And he said that gender ideology is a Luciferian refusal to receive a sexual nature from God. It is an absolute refusal. I think it's so spot on in what's going on. And so I think ladies out there listening that see everything happening right now, and even the word woman is this ugly thing they don't want you saying unless they benefit from it somehow in our society, and we all know what that means, then they're willing to use the word woman. But God has a purpose. He has a plan. And Lisa, how does one apply this? Just like a stay-at-home mom, just taking care of her kids, living out her vocation, but really wants to have a better understanding of what the church teaches on this. What are some things, and how can she actually live this out in her day-to-day vocation? Because feminist genius seems like it's something for a theologian or something for scholars to discuss amongst themselves, you know, not for like the stay-at-home mom, but that is actually precisely what Pope John Paul II was talking about. There are different entities of the feminine genius that we all can live out of, correct?
Yes. Yeah. So he talks about these gifts that flow from the feminine genius. And he never gives us a list. He never says, you know, here's the eight aspects or the four aspects or whatever. I mean, he actually, I forgot to mention this earlier, he never defined the feminine genius himself. He never came out and said, the feminine genius is blank, right? And so that's where I think some of the confusion comes in, is it wasn't just this clear cut, here's very simply, let me lay it out clearly, right? And so same thing with these gifts. So we kind of have to dig through his works to find, okay, where are these concepts that he comes back to continually, whether that be in the big places where he talks about it would be in his letter to women from 1995. Mm-hmm. That's a short read. And I would encourage any woman, if you've never sat down and read that one, that's a quick read. It's very understandable. He wrote it for the United Nations Conference on Women in 1995. So it was written not to, you know, just church folk, but it was written to women of the world, really. And that he knew his audience in that letter. And then also Mulieris Dignitatum, which is on the nature and dignity of woman, which is a longer letter, not letter, but I think it's an apostolic exhortation is the official title. It was written in 1988, where he really breaks down a lot more of these concepts. And then we have...
Well, do you have a link to the speech that he gave to the United Nations on women? And if you give that to me, what I'll do, ladies, is I will post that and I will put it on Twitter after the show is done today. So then that way, if any of you do want to just go and click on that link, then you can even just print it out and read it when maybe if you have a breastfeeding baby, have it there next to your that's where I did a lot of my reading. My goodness, I got books written while I was breastfeeding. So there's a lot that could happen while you're sitting there with your little baby, or just print it out. And when there's a time, or put it wherever your reading corner is, and then just go through it. And even if you have to piecemeal it and you can't read it all in one read, that's fine. But I think there's so much fruit in there that can benefit a lot of what's going on and your understanding of of this feminine genius. But do you have the link, Lisa? And then I'll post it for everybody and they can just click on that.
Absolutely. Yep. That's an easy one. I can definitely get that to you. Yeah. So I mean, John Paul II, he spoke to us as women frequently. He had a special place in his heart for us, I think, because at the time, you got to look at it. This was 1988. This was 1995. And then in between too, you see times where he's speaking at his Wednesday audiences, where he's really specifically addressing women. And I think he's doing this because in the 80s and 90s, like I said, my experience growing up as a kid was that women were really being told, hey, stop being so feminine, become more masculine. And so he was saying, oh, no, ladies, listen, what you bring to this world is vitally essential. You humanize the world. And if you start trying to become like men who have their own unique role, then we're just going to have one expression of humanity. We're just going to have a bunch of, you know, people expressing humanity in a masculine form, and we're going to lose a piece of our humanity. What you bring complements men, and without that, we're going to lose that humanizing aspect that you bring. And so when I say that humanizing aspect, I'm thinking back, Kristalina, to that question of, you know, so what do you say to that woman who's home, right? Like, that work that you're doing as a wife and a mother is very foundational to the feminine genius. You get to express that gift that all women are given in our kind of foundational nature as human beings who are women, who are made to be receptive and made to be maternal. Right? Like, that's just written on our bodies, right? Like, it's just
in our nature.
Yeah. It's written on our, it's something that's first actually written on our souls and then revealed through our bodies, because we were made in the image of God who what? Gives and receives. And so we were created to give and receive. And we, as women, in a unique way, reveal that ability to receive right through our bodies, because we can receive in the marital act and we can mother. And whether or not a woman physically becomes a mother or not, all women have the gifts needed to mother because she has the potential to be a mother. She has that womb. And so God gives every woman those gifts to mother. And so some women live that out as physical mothers, and other women live that out as spiritual mothers, not just religious sisters, although they definitely live that out, right? In a very unique way, their spiritual motherhood. But even those who are not yet physical mothers, or maybe will never be physical mothers, those who are adoptive mothers, right? We all have this gift to be able to mother the world, to be able to bring into this world this ability to nurture. Like, that's what a good mom does, right? Like, she nurtures her children to become who they were created to be. And we as women nurture the world in a unique way so that the world can be as it was created to be. And that's part of our role, is to help people achieve that. And so as physical mothers, you get this amazing opportunity to have that front row seat of building a soul, you know, building their character, helping them develop and become who they're going to be for their life here on earth. But even more than that, for all of eternity, like, we were created to live forever as immortal souls. And you get to be that person who helps that soul grow in love of Jesus and in love of neighbor. And like, what a unique and amazing gift that is, and privilege that is.
You know, it always is so shocking and even just humbling that the God of heaven and earth touched my womb and put life in there. My womb, Kristalina's womb, and gave me life and gave me my children. And God did that. And there was that moment where he put his life into my womb. And it was just, it's beautiful, because I don't think people just step back and think that, because it's between a man and a woman and that beautiful union that creates a child. But there's actually three that are creating that child, you know, God is in there. And it's just beautiful that he creates that life within you. And it's overwhelming, at least for me, to think of that, you know. And I know in that moment when he doesn't, he gives you that child, he gives you all the graces necessary to raise and nurture and get through whatever it is you need to take care of that life that he gave you. And even if he takes that life away, I lost two children with miscarriages, that he knew that was going to happen, but he gave me those lives, and there was a reason and a purpose and a plan. And my children know, and we pray and we talk about them sometimes, but those are my babies too, waiting for me. And I feel like the second I just die, they're going to be there, you know, mm-hmm. just right there when I open my eyes. But it's beautiful that every life that God gives you, no matter what happens, there is a purpose and there is a plan. And also an easy way to nurture your children at home, almost with this concept of the gifts and what God created them to be, to kind of live this out. I ask my children all the time, they just get annoyed. And it's interesting the different things over time that come out of their mouths, right? Of just, what do you think? That's what I ask. What do you think God wants you to be when you grow up? Instead of, oh, what do you want to be when you grow up? Or what do you want to do when you grow up? No, that's not the right question in my mind. It's, what do you think God wants you to be when you grow up, right? Yeah. And they kind of think about that. And I'm like, he gave you gifts. They're there. You got to find them. Like, and just little things here and there that I say, but it's literally written in our hearts. And it's almost just like the deeper we dive into that relationship with him, he kind of reveals to us over time the gifts and talents. And it's almost this beautiful dance and relationship that you have with God as you grow into them, right?
Mm-hmm. And I love that as a mom, getting to help your kids discover that, right? Like, you know your kids in a really unique way because you've known them, you know, you've been with them since the instant that they were created, right? Mm-hmm. Something beautiful about that. Or since the instant they were born, for those adoptive mothers. I mean, you've been with them every step of the way. And so you get to know their personalities. You get to see them. How do they react in different situations? And where do they struggle and where do they succeed and excel? And to get to help them draw that out, like, what a privilege. It's been so fun. You know, my oldest is a, you know, 15 teenager like yours. Jeez, all the way down to, I know, right?
Right. No, I used to live by Lisa in Colorado. And yep. We didn't live that far. And the kids would come over to my house and play on my blow up jumper and the swing set and my crazy home. Okay. It just was a fun
Loved
house
it.
At times, but it was
Loved
really
it.
Sweet. Lisa brought meals over when I had the baby and it was just really, really sweet. And it's just so interesting. Even when I saw pictures of your kids on Instagram, it was shocking because I just remember them being so little, jumping in my jumper, you know, in my living room. And here they are, and they've grown up so much, and it happens so fast, Lisa. And
I
we
know.
Really do have a short time to implement what it is we need, but they will always go back to that foundation that you plant for them. They do. I did. Mm-hmm. I even, as far as I went off and sinning and everything else, you kind of always go back to that foundation at some point in your life, it seems like.
Mm-hmm. That's the hope. That's the prayer, right? Like, that's always my prayer, is like, oh Lord, I hope I'm giving them everything they need before they head out so they don't forget you. And when they do stray, you know, whatever degree that is, that they will remember to come back to you, Lord. Like, I pray that has not been forgotten, right? That your love, that your mercy, your forgiveness is never forgotten in their hearts.
Yeah. And we've got to keep on, no matter how hard or how much society comes against us. We got to just keep on as moms and always just do what we know is right for our children. And God has put that in our hearts. And you have that mama intuition. And that's that beautiful gift that all mothers have that God has given us, that you just know sometimes what your kids need, right? You just know what you know. You know when they're doing something wrong too. At least I do. Or at least I've had so many over the time. I'm just like, where's Colby? Just be quiet. What's going on? You know, you just kind of know, because God has given you that gift of motherhood. And there's certain things that come along with it that I thank him for every day.
Yes. And I love that you brought up intuition, because that is one of the 8 gifts that I explore in the book.
Ooh, I want to get into what all the different gifts are, Lisa. And I want you to kind of list them, and then we can go through them. And we are going to take a quick break with our friends at EWTN. And we will be back with Lisa Cotter. And she is going to go through the list of all the different gifts. And we will be talking more about her beautiful book, Reveal and Feminine Genius. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Women Made New. I'm your host, Crystalina Everett. Thank you for joining us. We are here with Lisa Cotter discussing her new book, Reveal, Living the Feminine genius. And before we went to break, we were discussing all the different lists of the different gifts that are within her book that she explains and describes. And Lisa, would you go through some of them or all of them for the listeners right now?
Yeah, let's start with self-giving. That's the first one on the list. And to make sure, I always want to be clear with this. So this is not a definitive list. JP2 didn't say here are the 8 gifts of the feminine genius, or, you know, he never gave us a list, but these are the things that I saw him pulling out frequently as he was talking about the feminine genius, the gift of womanhood, what women uniquely bring into the world. And so I start with self-giving, which I think some people, if you know the theology of the body, that can be a little surprising because it's like, oh, but I thought that women's nature is receptive, man's nature is as a giver, right? And this is not wrong in any way at all to understand it in that way. But it doesn't mean that these gifts are exclusive. So Pope Benedict does an amazing job of talking about how men and women, there are certain gifts that that each gender is the privileged sign of. So it means that there's something about this gift that a particular gender lives uniquely well, and their job is to model that to the other gender who's also called to live that, right? So we know that all humans, John Paul II was famous for always saying this idea, this phrase that man can only fully find himself in a sincere gift of self to other, right? Mm-hmm. So this is a universal call that we be self-giving, but there's a unique way that women give and a unique way that we are a gift of self to the world, to our families, to our friends, even to our places where we work. We have the unique call and gift of self that we bring. And so that's where I start, is with this idea of what is this unique way in which women give of themselves to the world. And then we move into receptivity, which is this one we were talking about a little earlier, that's written on our soul, but revealed through our bodies in a unique way as women. And then maternity, which I had also mentioned. So these are kind of the foundations really of the feminine genius, of the gifts that flow, of the gifts. And then from these things flow some other gifts that John Paul II talked about quite frequently that we haven't really touched on. So I'd be happy to hear your thoughts on these two, Kristalina. So the first one is sensitivity. John Paul II talked a lot about how women have a unique sensitivity. And when I first heard that, I thought, oh man, well, I'm not a very good woman because I'm not very sensitive. But
here, here, you know, like, to a certain extent, we have that capacity, but well, my question is, what's the difference between intuition and sensitivity? Because they're very close aligned, right?
You're absolutely right. Ah, you're so good, Kristalina. No. Yes, I know that was one I asked myself too, but there's this list that he gives in his letter to women, where he lists these 4 gifts kind of rapid fire. He talks about, he thanks women for their sensitivity, intuition, generosity, and fidelity. And you're like, huh. So he lists them separately as 2 different things. And then if you go and you look in his writings, you'll see different times where he talks about sensitivity and he talks about intuition. But I think they're closely related, absolutely. But I think we first have to remember that sometimes we define things based on how the world defines them, mm-hmm. and not how the church or God defines them, right? So when we think of sensitivity from a worldly perspective, the reason I thought, I was like, oh man, I'm not a very good woman, is because I immediately thought sensitivity, crying, right? Like being overly emotional.
Yes.
Like I'm just not that kind of girl. Like I don't cry during many movies, you know, like it takes a lot to move me to tears in the sense of like emotion, right? But John Paul II's sensitivity, what he's more speaking of is we're sensitive to the needs of others.
Okay. I like that. That really does put kind of a line in the sand.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you think about like Mary at the wedding feast of Cana, right? Like she was very sensitive to the needs of that couple. They're running out of wine. She knows that's going to embarrass them. She knows that, you know, it's this friend's wedding day. And that's the last thing that she would want, is to not be able to provide for her guests. And so she's very sensitive to that need. And so that's sensitivity. So this idea of like, oh, we see the needs of others. I think intuition, kind of the way I break it down, is that we see them and then we know what to do about them. That's where the intuition, right? The idea of just like, you just know.
Yes.
You know what to do. You know how to handle it. Mm-hmm. Your brain starts rapid firing. And there's even science behind this, just the way that men's and women's brains are different and the way that we process, right? Women, like everything starts firing and everything's connecting. And right away we can go, okay, this means this and this means this and this means this. And we need to do that, right?
Yes, whereas, exactly. Uh-huh.
Yeah. Men tend to, right? We're speaking in generalities here. Men tend to compartmentalize a little more. It's like, well, we've got this problem. How do we solve this? And we have this problem. And women are like, well, we can solve all those problems like this.
Multitaskers, right? Basically.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And there's science behind that. There's brain-based science behind that that is not just written in the Catholic world, but in the secular world. It cannot be denied the way that our brains function. Yeah, so I think those two are very, very connected, sensitivity and intuition. But that's kind of how I break it down a little bit in the book. And I think it's fun to note, too, what I do with each of these gifts is I give the gift, and then I talk about a saint who lived it really well. And we look
fantastic.
At their... Yeah, it's actually, this is one of my favorite parts of the book, is we look at their life. We do like a deep dive of their life, and we see... For example, intuition, it's St. Catherine of Siena. Like, where did she live her intuition? How do we see that lived out? Or for maternity, it's St. Elizabeth Ann Seton, right? And I love her because she was a physical mother. She was an adoptive mother. She was a spiritual mother as a teacher. And she was mother superior of her religious order. So like, she got to experience and live all these aspects. Yeah, so like, how did she live that? What does that look like? And then we look at, okay, so here's this gift we've been given, right? We're the privileged sign of this. It's more natural to us. It's what we get to bring into the world in a unique way, model to the men in our lives and to our children who are growing up and learning how to live these gifts. And in some sense, there's some link to, and in a sense, they're like virtues in the sense that, you know, we can grow in these things, right? And so we look at, but how can that get twisted? How can this great gift get twisted by the world and turn not from a strength, but into a weakness? And then what do we do about it when that happens? And so that's kind of how each chapter flows as we look at each of these gifts.
I love it, Lisa. That's phenomenal. And it really will break it down to any ABC Catholic like myself can understand and really take on these concepts. And one thing I know about the feminine genius and the gifts that God has given all of us is they're not meant just for us alone. God's gifts for us and that he's given us are never just meant for us, but we benefit from them, absolutely. But they're always meant to be gifted out for his church, for his people, for the greater glory of God, basically, right? And it's always meant to be given. And then you also receive in that giving. It's really beautiful how he created this cycle of life within the church, right?
Yes. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And that's why like that first gift is self-giving, because these gifts, like you said, they're not meant to serve us. They're meant to serve the world.
Yes. And that's when you thrive. That's when you're kind of happy and more at peace. And it's so opposite, upside down, right? In the world's concept of, well, you have to live for yourself. Do it for yourself. You can't give right now. You can't have kids right now. You're going to waste your life. You're going to waste your youth, you know? And then you're scrambling at trying to just keep everything for yourself. And then you're miserable and you have regrets and, well, it's just not a good life. It just isn't. And everyone that has lived that life or had a taste of that life like me, I wouldn't want to go back for anything, for nothing, you know? And I was living for myself in every way. And it was horrible, disgusting lifestyle. Just binging on your own needs and wants is not a way to live at all. And so to really just give it all to God, because then you have that weight of the world and the sin and the confusion. And honestly, the more you live these things out right ordered, the easier and things just flow. Doesn't it seem that way, Lisa? And I fought it for a little while. I mean, being a speaker and going out and traveling and doing everything else, I was absolutely living my feminine genius in that for a time. And it was just for a season though, right? But then it kind of evolved because I got married and then I started having children and things changed. And so my gifts changed that God gave me and what he was asking me to do with those gifts. And so there also are seasons with these gifts as well, wouldn't you say?
Yes. Yeah. And I think that's so important because I think sometimes we think, oh, well, I'll have to lose a part of myself. And in some sense, yeah, we do lose a piece of ourselves when we become mothers, but in the best way possible. But those gifts are still being used. They're just now being directed towards something new and something different. And, you know, it's not like, oh, well, now I can't ever, you know, live this gift that I have anymore, but that, no, I'm going to use it in a different way.
Yes. And sometimes it changes and shifts, and then God brings you right back to it full circle, and you're stronger and you're better in that gift that you had to put on pause for a while, is what I have found, right? Mm-hmm. And the more you kind of give into what God is asking versus what you're asking, it hurts in the beginning sometimes, right? But at the same time, it's because you're growing and you're tapping into something new that he's given you, and you've got to get the muscle for it. And the only way to do that is to live it out day in and day out, right? To become strong in that. And it hurts and it's hard, but that I think comes along with gifts as well, wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Yeah. And that's where I think when I say that they're kind of like virtues, in the sense that you can grow in these things. Because I've had women say to me, well, I'm just not very maternal, or I'm just naturally selfish. I'm not self-giving.
Join the club.
Yeah. I'm like, oh, I understand that. But just because God gave these gifts to you doesn't mean that they're just quick and easy and natural. You have to grow in them. You have to work for them. You have to develop them and cultivate them. Especially if you've grown up not being told that these gifts are good, or that these gifts are purposeful, or you know, I guess, you know, sometimes some of these more feminine gifts, you know, being sensitive or intuitive, you know, sometimes in like the work world or in the cutthroat world of just trying to move the needle forward, those aren't as valued. And so they're not as cultivated. And so then you get to this stage where you really need them and you go, oh, well, I'm just not good at them. Well, maybe that's true, but that doesn't mean that you can't grow in them. That doesn't mean that you can't develop them. That doesn't mean that you can't turn to the Lord and say, hey, I know that like this is written on my heart, and this is a part of who I am, but Lord, like, show me, how do I do this? How do I be selfless? How do I give of myself when I don't want to? Because I think that's natural, right? Like, it doesn't mean you don't possess the gift. It just means that maybe you haven't exercised that muscle before. But once you do, it gets easier. And then it starts to become enjoyable, right? Like, I think about running. When I was in college, I trained for and ran a marathon. And those first few weeks were just painful. I did not like it. I didn't want to get up and go run. I didn't want to, you know, have to stretch and get going. And then by the end of the marathon, oh my gosh, I loved running. Like, it was hard work, but my body craved it. I loved it. I got into a rhythm with it, and it became something that was natural. And then it was enjoyable.
What got you into running?
You know, I am just a goal-oriented person.
Yes, you are. You are, really. You're very serious, which is a beautiful thing. It's great, and you get a lot done, but What got you into it? Were you doing it with friends? Was there a boyfriend? What was the motivation? Because when you really don't like doing something, but you keep on and keep on, there always has to be some motivation in it.
Yeah, I think, you know, I'm just the type of person who just wants to prove that they can do things that they don't think they can do, right? So yeah. I was in college, and I remember in high school running the mile for the last time and thinking, oh, good. I never have to run long distance again. I mean, this is 1 mile. And here I was. So ridiculous. And so I just thought, you know, I'm going to run a marathon, and I'm just going to start at the beginning. I picked up a training book. It was like the non-runner's marathon trainer. Right. And it started out with like, take a 10-minute walk. I'm like, okay, I can do that. Right. Yeah. Like, I like to prove to myself that I can do things if I take the steps and I'm patient with myself and I hold on loosely, right? Because sometimes you set big goals and you can't finish them because that's not what God's calling you to. Sometimes that, you only can take it so far, and there's a reason, and you just have to let go of it. But it's funny that you say, was it for a boyfriend? Because it was not for a boyfriend, but halfway through my training, my husband, Kevin, who was just a friend. Yeah,
I knew there was something.
I think there was an extra motivation to finish, I should say. I think I would have finished anyway.
That got you through.
Yeah, he started to run with me just for fun. And it was through running. It was through that time just to have conversation. And sometimes other people would run with us. Sometimes it was just he and I. It kind of depended on the day and the run. But we really got to see each other and know each other in a unique way. You know, when you're running up a hill and you want to quit, you see someone's perseverance. You see their character come out, right?
And the whining or just how they handle the toughness of the situation, huh?
Yep. And here we were. And yeah, so we started a couple weeks before the actual running of the marathon. We started officially dating. So yeah.
Nice. You still run too to this day together, don't you?
We always run on our dating anniversary because he asked me out right before a run. And so that was really cute, like on our first date. So we always run on that day. And then we haven't, it's a little harder with kids, with younger kids, you know. But we do try to get out and run together. Not nearly as much as we'd like to. But there's seasons. Like all things, there's seasons. So,
like all things, right? There are seasons. And even when it comes to these gifts and feminine genius, God sends you helpers. God sends you like helpmates or people, like even just if you're confused at what or how they should be living as a woman, and especially a Catholic woman these days, right? Because some people are afraid to even admit they're Catholic, let alone like living it out in public, you know, in the public square of living your feminine genius gifts out. It can be a little intimidating right now. What would you say to those women?
I think you have to have that eternal perspective, right? Like if we listen to the world for our cues, we're going to have to change who we are every 10 to 15 years. We're going to have to change what we think we're supposed to be. And that's just exhausting to me. So I love the security of knowing this is never going to change. You know, my understanding of who I am as a woman, whether I'm 18 or I'm 80, it's rooted in scripture. It's rooted in the teachings of the church. And I can take peace in that. And I don't have to try to figure it out over and over and over again or redefine myself over and over again. Of course, it can always go deeper, right? My understanding is always going to go deeper, but it's not going to change tracks. You know, it's not going to completely jump ship. And so just in some sense, we really just have to let go of that and not be afraid of what the world is saying or thinking or doing or feeling like pressured to conform to what society is telling us. We can stand firm in our roots and say, it's okay. It's okay. I know who I am. I know who God created me to be. I know what unique gifts I bring into this world in a broad sense as a woman. And then in a more deeper laser focused sense as an individual, how God is calling me to express and live my femininity and the way that I'm to called to bring, you know, my gifts into the world, right? Like not everyone can be Crystallina, not everyone should be Crystallina, right? We don't need more Crystallinas. We need you, right?
That's right. That's right.
But as, you know, but still as understanding your basic foundations. And then from there, I mean, just look at the lives of the saints. Like they give us this amazing example of the way in which the way you live and express your femininity is like so vast. We have female saints from every nation, from every language, from every period of time, and the way that they lived it looks so differently when you compare a Thérèse of Lisieux, who was, you know, a cloistered nun, the little flower, right? And then you compare that to like a Teresa of Avila, who was like out in the world and founding convents and boldly, you know,
nonsense.
Speaking. No nonsense, girl. That's right, right? And then you have, you know, saints who were mothers, and you have saints who, you know, never made a vow as a married or a religious, but lived their whole lives as singles and served the world in their own unique way, right? And so like there's so many ways you can express this that I think sometimes we get afraid because we think we have to be in this one little box. And if we don't fit that box, then we're failing. When God's like, no, like I have a unique call for you. And it's okay if it doesn't look like the woman standing next to you, you know, who's also striving to live her vocation and is asking that same question, Crystallina, that you ask your kids, you know, not like, what do I want to do with my life? But Lord, what do you want me to do with my life? Like, I think that's a question we should always ask ourselves. You know?
It really is a guiding point and a starting point of what you're doing with your life. And something I really want to highlight is what you just said, Lisa. I absolutely love it. Is like, are you taking your cues from the world? And that is really a good question to ask when you're taking some spiritual inventory. Like, where are you getting your cues from? Why are you doing what you're doing? And if that question, if also the question of who are you and whose are you, if those are questions that you hear Lisa and I talking about and you don't know the answer to that, that is something good to maybe today go into adoration and talk to Jesus about, because those mm-hmm. are questions you should know immediately. And if you mm-hmm. don't, you got to start talking to God. You got to get to confession and you've got to get right with him. And he will answer those questions for you. He's not excluding you or leaving you out or doesn't have that same plan for you. He does. And I think it's so sad that women are so competitive and territorial that they can't put that aside and realize, like, I'm not your competition, Lisa. And Lisa is not my competition, but we're mm-hmm. all here for the greater glory of God. And he gave us individual, beautiful gifts to live out and to help each other and to help other people, you know? And it's not about wanting to be like that other person. You should want to grow into the amazing, magnificent person God is actually calling you to be. And you can be a force to be reckoned with, but you have to recognize that you belong to God and he has this great, amazing plan. But how are you living your life out to follow that?
Mm-hmm.
Become that.
And just so your listeners know, Kristalina, I know you and I've known you for years. You are one of the best people at that. I always say when people are like, if I tell someone I'm on your show, you know, it's like, oh, well, what's Kristalina like? I always say she is the best cheerleader I know. Like, you are just
always so
cheering
sweet.
People on. But it's so true. Like, you say that. I just want everyone to know that that's not a line. Like, she's not just talking. Like, she lives that. Like, she has always been so supportive of any project I have going on. She's always like, what can I do? How can I help? Let's get this out there. The world needs this. And I think you're just an amazing example of what you're saying. Like, you live it. And I love that.
Oh, Lisa, thank you. Brought tears to my eyes. You did. You're so sweet. Thank you. I really appreciate that. I just feel women really need to lift each other up, especially now, and to come together. Mm. And everybody needs that. Okay, Lisa, I'm so excited about this book. And it has been very helpful for me, too, also as a refresher, you know, because you can forget. But where can people buy this book?
The easiest place is ascensionpress.com/reveal-the-gift, all one word. And it's also on Amazon. So if you just, you know, search Reveal the Gift, Living the Feminine Genius, you're going to find it.
And honestly, it's not something you have to read all at once. It can just Mm-mm. be in different sittings or in the morning. You do a chapter at a time or a couple pages at a time to just really, really let it kind of sit with you. It's absolutely a great book. And
thank you.
Thank you for being here again. It's been fun and it's been nice talking with you again. We always have a good time.
I know. I do. I really feel like we're just having coffee. It's great.
Right? Well, thank you for being here, and you will be in my prayers, and I will have you back on soon.
I would love that.
I want to thank my guest again, Lisa Cotter, for being here, and thank all of you for joining. Tonight is the first prom that we are going to experience in our household. So if you all could please say a prayer for me. I have two teenagers going to prom tonight. So if you could say a prayer for me, I would appreciate that. And before I leave you, I would like to leave this show with a quote from Mother Angelica. In everything that happens, Jesus is sounding the call to holiness. That's an excellent quote. I'm going to put that on my refrigerator. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend, and I'll see you next week. God bless. Bye-bye.